You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The protagonists of Jessica Soffer's debut novel, Tomorrow There Will Be Apricots, are two deeply lonely New Yorkers who share a love of food. They are Lorca, a 14-year-old girl who cuts and burns herself to feel alive, and Victoria, an octogenarian originally from Iraq, who finds herself overcome with guilt and regret over the death of her husband. Lorca and Victoria meet when the eighth grader enrolls in the Iraqi Jewish cooking class the older woman has advertised, and the relationship that develops between them as they prepare shakshuka and masgouf changes both of their lives in unexpected ways. In a review in the April issue of the Atlantic Monthly, D.B. Grady called the novel moving and extraordinary. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm very pleased that it brings Jessica Soffer to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Your title has a poetic ring to it. Where does it come from?
It comes from an Arabic phrase, tomorrow there will be apricots, and it means a number of things depending on what region of the Middle East you're from. In a lot of ways, it means tomorrow there will be good things. In a lot of ways, it sort of means a little bit of the opposite, in that the apricot season is very short and very fickle. Sometimes there is no apricot season at all. And so it can mean don't put off tomorrow what you can do today.
And is that something you learned from your father?
I didn't learn the phrase from my father. The title came after I finished the book. But certainly the notion of anything Iraqi Jewish does come from my father.
Sasan Soffer was a sculptor and a painter born in Baghdad.
Yes.
Made his way to the United States after the Arab-Israeli War in 1948.
Yes.
Did a lot of people leave? Are people surprised when you tell them that after World War I, one-third of Baghdad's population was Jewish?
Yes, people are shocked. And actually, they're a particularly interesting group in that they sort of modeled themselves after the Brits. After the Brits left in 1942, there was all kinds of instability, and Churchill and Hitler took advantage of it. And then there was just mass anti-Semitism. It was quite awful. And the majority of people left and went. They were airlifted, actually, from Baghdad to Israel. And so a very kind of vocal and political population grew from there. But my father took the road less traveled by through Iran, eventually to Ellis Island.
And your Soffer is an Arabic word, isn't it?
Yes, it means scribe. My father's father was a scribe.
So I guess there's a family tradition here.
I suppose.
When the story opens, Lorca has been caught cutting herself in the school bathroom, and she's been suspended from the eighth grade. We quickly learn that this isn't the first time. Why did you make a cutter the central character in your first novel?
I think that the notion of coping is one that I've always been concerned with, kind of learning how to live in one's skin, learning how to live in the world, which can often be tragic, is just something that I'm fascinated by. And I think, in a way, cutting is a way to feel more, you know, it's trying to inhabit one's feelings more. It's not really escapism, I don't think. And for me, that's kind of very much what I do when I read books. It's a way to feel more, to inhabit the world more.
Do people assume that you might be a cutter? They look at your wrists when they talk
to
you?
They do. They tend to glance down. And I was not a cutter. I think had I been a cutter, I probably wouldn't have been able to write this book.
But you actually have been interested in this for a while, because the novel read a story called Pain that you wrote in graduate school?
Yeah, it was a story. It was the staccato recounting of a woman's life of pain from the time that she's very young till the time that she's an adult. And the story didn't really work for a number of reasons, I think in part because it just was so sad. There was no relief from the sadness. And so in the novel, I wanted to make sure that there was a counterpoint to that.
Although there are pretty graphic descriptions of Lorca's self-inflicted harmful behavior, something I might not want to read while I was eating lunch.
I think that happens. I think people have that reaction to it. I'd like to think that there's as much hope in the book as there is tragedy.
Aren't cutters more likely to be girls than boys?
More likely, but there are certainly boys as well. I mean, self-harm is really rampant.
And a lot of people would say that this is this kind of behavior is a plea for attention.
It can be. It certainly can be. A lot of what it depends on is where the cutters cut themselves. If they cut themselves, for example, on their lower arms, the tendency is sort of, the likelihood is that they want people to see it. But there's a lot of different ways of doing it. You can cut yourself on your inner thigh. Sometimes that signals sexual abuse.
Now, your writing is can be quite beautiful.
Thank you.
And you have been praised for your style. Colin McCann has called you a profound and necessary new voice. That's nice.
Very nice.
Will you read a bit for us?
I'd love to. I'm going to read from, it's pretty early on in the book, and it's Lorca just beginning to discuss her experience with pain. The first time I was 6, I was making a cake for my mother's birthday and slipped on some grease when I was putting it in the oven. I seared both hands on the middle rack. For a second, the pain surprised me, took me, lifted me as if by a wave. I trapped the scream in my throat, but tears busted out of my face. I was all shock until I heard my mother's footsteps and realized that I'd put my hands out to do it again, touch the heat again, be lifted again when the rack collapsed. The undone cake splattered like vomit. There were fresh raspberries in the batter. She came in. After that, there were light bulbs, tire spokes, vacuums. There were car doors, glue guns, and broken bottles winking to me from the side of the road. There was the grill in summer that could stay piping hot well after dinner, well after everyone had fallen asleep.
So it's almost a kind of masochism to feel more alive. But the attention side, the reason I ask that is because Lorca seems desperate to attract her mother Nancy's attention. Nancy is a chef in a French restaurant and treats Lorca as a kind of a burden. She strikes me as the only character in your novel who's difficult to like. Was that your intention?
Yes, for sure she's difficult to like. I think for Lorca, though, the pain isn't the way that she's trying to access her mother's love. I think really food is the vehicle through which she escapes her own loneliness, and food is the way that she tries to kind of interact with her mother.
And Nancy decides to send Lorca to a boarding school rather than to get her the help that she needs. How does that threat lead Lorca to track down Victoria, the other character in this novel?
She, early on in the novel, she hears her mother talking about this dish that she had many years ago with Lorca's father, called mesgouf, which is the national dish of Iraq. It's a grilled fish dish. And it sort of occurs to her that she'd never heard about this dish before. She'd never heard her mother mention it. And it sort of seems to her that that might be the key to her mother's happiness, and it might be her inn.
Because Victoria had a restaurant, and she prepared mesgouf?
That's right. Lorca looks up all these restaurants in New York, desperate to find the one that might have carried this fish dish at one point. And it does lead her to the restaurant that Victoria and her husband Joseph owned. And that's how Lorca finds Victoria.
So are you saying that the people who cook Iraqi food are nicer than the ones who cook French food?
I am not saying anything of the sort.
My guest is Jessica Soffer, S-O-F-F-E-R. Her novel, Tomorrow There Will Be Apricots. So mesgouf is the considered the national dish of Iraqi cuisine or Jewish cuisine?
It's considered the national dish of Iraq. It's sort of a tragic story, though, because the fish was typically caught in the Tigris and the Euphrates, whisked right out of the waters, grilled right there on the banks by the fishmongers with lemons and tamarind and sometimes tomatoes. And
considering the condition of the Tigris and the Euphrates these days, that is not happening very often.
Exactly. So it's a very nostalgic dish for the Iraqi Jews and one that can't really be eaten in the way that it once was.
Well, you have included a recipe for mesgouf in the novel. Can it be made with locally caught fish?
It can, but of course it's adapted. It's not the same, but I mean, that's what we must do with our memories.
Victoria is surprised to hear that Nancy had remembered mesgouf as her favorite meal. Is that because mesgouf is a relatively simple dish?
It is a very simple dish. It's a very clean dish with clean flavors. It's white fish of any sort. It was carp in Baghdad, but it can be any kind of white fish, and it's grilled just with some lemon and often pickles of some variety.
Was your mother also born in Iraq?
My mother wasn't. She was born in Florida and grew up in New Jersey.
And she's a writer and an editor?
She is. My whole life was the editor of a kids' magazine, Kids Discover, and a voracious reader. And she was a playwright. And she started writing true crime books when I was in college and took to them. They came sort of naturally to her. She's very good at it. She's a great researcher, very diligent. And she wrote those for quite some time. I think she published 7 of them.
I've talked to a lot of writers whose parents were also writers.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something to that, watching a parent go off into a room, closing the door, and then emerging hours later, either happy or unhappy with what had happened?
I do. I think both my parents were artists in different ways, and I think growing up with that really has dictated my whole life. I mean, it's the way I sort of organize the world in terms of creativity, in terms of my time, in terms of everything. And so it would have felt very unnatural to me to have a career in something like finance or insurance, but it felt very natural to kind of to calculate the world as they did, which was according to art.
Although you teach writing. Your mother didn't teach writing.
No. My mother did teach for a time. She taught English, but I do teach writing, and but I teach creative writing, which I think is a different way of thinking and a different way of teaching entirely.
You've said that this novel started with an image that came to you of a young woman and an old woman cooking together. Do ideas for stories usually come to you in visual images?
They do. It's kind of the way I manipulate my thoughts is through images and then eventually into words. And the image came to me very soon on, and Lorca was absolutely in that image, and it was through that image that I came to Victoria.
And I mentioned Victoria feeling guilty about her husband's death. What happened?
Her husband.
I don't know how much you want to reveal.
This won't reveal too terribly much. Her husband passes away pretty early on in the novel, and she's kind of left alone. It occurs to her that she's very much alone, and she's given up a child years before for adoption. And all of a sudden, it becomes very pressing that she finds someone to share the rest of her life with.
You've said that you've been interested in the subjects of loneliness and death for some time now, so it made sense for you to focus on it in your first novel?
Yes, for sure. I don't really know where that comes from. My father passed away 3 years ago, was sick for lots of my childhood, and I was an only child, so I imagine that is where it comes from. But I think that writers in general are concerned with loneliness and with their own mortality. They're the two most pressing things.
You don't think that you've gotten loneliness and mortality out of your system with this book?
I don't think so, and I sort of hope not. I mean, those are things, I can't imagine any greater issues to confront than those.
Are you still writing short stories?
I've been writing a lot of nonfiction, and just recently I wrote a story again, and it felt so good. It felt like coming home. I realized how much I love fiction, how much I crave it, actually. And so I've been trying to write more fiction, and I have the idea for a novel percolating. I'm really excited to throw myself back into it. There's really nothing like writing a novel. I've realized it's the form that I gravitate to.
Well, there's a big difference in the way most nonfiction is written, other than if Tom Wolfe is doing it or somebody like that. Do you find yourself working out of different parts of your brain when you're writing nonfiction and fiction?
I do, and parts of my brain that I enjoy working out, but also there are such constraints in writing nonfiction. It doesn't expand in the way, it's not flexible in the way that fiction is. And I realize it's really not the form for me, although I have enjoyed it.
And right now, it's become the dominant form of literature.
Yes.
There was a time when fiction was. Where did the name Lorca come from?
Well, of course, the poet, but I think it comes from, for the character herself, I think it comes from the notion of she's desperate to find some kind of love from one of her parents, either one of them, and her father names her after the poet, and she just always wants to find the connection there, and she thinks that maybe because her father named her Lorca, it was after the poet that he so loved. So she's always just trying to get some kind of affection, some kind of consolation from either of her parents, and her name is one way that she tries to access it.
Not named after a poet in Arabic, some of the great poets of the past.
Well, right. Lorca is not of Iraqi Jewish descent. Only Victoria is, and yeah.
Jessica Soffer's novel, Tomorrow There Will Be Apricots, is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.